Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elding.
And I'm Ken Rutan. Wednesday, I'm on the Red Line on the Metro, minding my own business.
This is a subway that runs underneath our nation's capital.
That's right, as it should. And a gentleman comes over to me and says, "Are you Ken Rutan?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And he says, "I am a big fan of the podcast." His name is Daniel Honker.
And he offered to make us a bumper sticker.
Honker, if you love the podcast.
There you go.
He loved the podcast. I said, "Well, how do you recognize me?" And he said, "I recognize you from the podcast."
How would he know what you looked like from listening?
Exactly. But it's true. And this was just out of nowhere. And I think that's more important than leading about some Afghanistan policy or something like that.
Speaking of Afghanistan, it's back on page one, thanks to Bob Woodward, who got a leak from someone in the defense establishment of the report by General Stanley McChrystal saying, "We have to decide whether or not we're going to put more troops into Afghanistan and change strategy, or whether we have to accustom ourselves to the prospect of losing this war and essentially having our mission in Afghanistan fail after 8 years." That was, I think, kind of a surprise to a lot of Americans to see how dire the situation in Afghanistan is.
Well, what I read from McChrystal's leaked memo is that there is a frustration in the military that there is no administration policy. President Obama back in March said, "We're going to do this, we're going to do that." Remember, during the campaign, Afghanistan was the good war. Iraq was the bad war. We're getting out of Iraq, but we're going to Afghanistan, which...
And he sent more troops.
But now it seems like there's some question mark. We saw the suggestion from Vice President Biden saying that, you know, we should withdraw troops considerably and just focus on the al-Qaeda terrorists. And so there seems to be confusion about what the administration policy is, and I think that's alarming our allies, which has commitments of thousands of troops as well.
I think we have to confront the prospect, and I think this is there between the lines in the McChrystal report, that this could be a defeat. This could be a war the United States would have to essentially retreat from in defeat, having not achieved our mission. And that is an extraordinary thing to suddenly tell the American people when, as you were saying, he had promised this would be the war we would win, this would be the one he was in favor of. Is it possible that the president will just decide to pull out?
Well, it's possible, but at some point he's going to have to let everybody know and let them down easily because, of course, you can accuse him of being...
That's just a 180 from where he was a year ago.
It is, and as Italy just mourns the deaths of six Italians who were killed in an attack...
Some Germans were killed this week.
They have to decide whether to keep troops, and do they wait for the United States to suddenly decide whether it's going to go all out or withdraw? And so it puts allies in a very precarious position.
You know, I wondered this, too, and I'm not suggesting this is necessarily what has happened, but it looks a little bit as though this is what's happened, that the administration wanted to focus on getting an enactment on health care, getting some kind of an enactment on energy policy, getting some kind of re-regulation of the financial industry completed, if possible, in 2009 or very early in 2010, and then turn to accustoming the nation to a new Afghan policy, which essentially was withdrawal.
They can't wait. They can't wait that long because, obviously, it is deteriorating fast. And I think the basis of McChrystal's report is that we can't just wait. We have to decide quickly what we're going to do.
But in the meantime, of course, he's letting it be known that he thinks that without more troops, it's doomed to failure, which means, essentially, give me more troops or else.
And Petraeus agrees with that, and Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, agrees with that as well.
So the president is arrayed against his entire military establishment if he decides to pull out, but if he decides to stay in, he has to double down on the bet. That means sending a lot of troops. Already, the polling on the Afghanistan war has gone south on him because of the Hamid Karzai situation. With this report, is it not going to decline in popularity still further? Is this not becoming a millstone for the president politically, whichever way he goes?
It could be, but what's interesting is the way the Republicans deal with it is that there should be more troops. We should not pull out. It's a flip-flop, and Obama cannot be trusted on foreign policy. The left also will be yapping at his heels, and justifiably, because they said, look, this is a quagmire. This is Vietnam. Afghanistan has shown in previous countries and previous administrations that they cannot be occupied. It just, you know, an occupying force will not succeed. And so Obama is basically getting heat from both sides.
So the big news on the political scene came from Massachusetts this week.
I know. It was shocking. It was amazing.
It was a big story.
It was amazing to watch the mayor, Menino, look like he's going to win a fifth consecutive term, which would be the longest-serving mayor in Boston. He is already the longest-serving mayor in Boston history.
Tommy Menino, better known as Mayor Mumbles.
Mayor Mumbles. And he is not only the longest-serving mayor, he's like 9 feet tall, which is, I think, also the longest mayor in Boston history.
Is that the longest mayor in Massachusetts history?
Boston history.
Is that a New England record?
No, Boston history.
All right. Interesting to know. Was there any other political news in the Bay State?
There was. And this week, the big news is that, one, the legislature, the state senate in Massachusetts, which is, I don't know why they call it a state senate, because it's the
Commonwealth.
What are they thinking?
Yes. Well.
But they went along with what the House, state House, decided to give the governor the power to fill a Senate vacancy.
In an emergency.
In an emergency.
And lo and behold, it turned out there was an emergency.
No, and that is that the Democrats only have 59 seats in the Senate.
Serious emergency.
Exactly. Emergency. And so Governor Patrick this week announced the pick of Paul Kirk,
the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee,
the longtime Kennedy ally who is back. I don't know if this is what turned the tide, but Ted Kennedy's two sons, Edward Jr. and Patrick Kennedy, mm-hmm. and his widow Vicky Kennedy, all seem to be lobbying the governor to say that Paul Kirk should be the choice.
He was close to the Kennedy family.
Very close. He worked for Kennedy on the Hill from 69 to 77. He co-founded the Commission on Presidential Debates. He is currently the chairman of the JFK Library in Boston.
And it's important to note that he is really only being tasked here with casting votes in the Senate for a matter of a few months.
Until January 19th.
On January 19th, the state will choose a new senator to fill until 2013.
January of 2013.
So this is a person who's going to be elected to a three-year term.
That's correct. And he, as he said on Thursday, I am not going to seek the full term. I'm not going to run for the seat in the election. I will just serve until the special election is held. A little point of personal privilege here also, Paul Kirk is a really nice guy. I mean, I've known him for a long time through his capacity as DNC chair and the chairman of the commission. And he's a partisan. He was the chairman of the DNC, but he's a really nice person.
This was part of the reason that he worked as a guy to work on the presidential debates and work it out between the two parties, because Republicans trusted him and were willing to negotiate with him in terms of putting on presidential debates every 4 years.
Frank Farrenkopf, who's the co-chair of that presidential commission, a former RNC chair, has the nicest things to say about
Republican
Paul Kirk.
Republican from Nevada, right? Yeah. So this is a kind of guy who, despite his personal friendship with you, Ken, probably is an excellent choice to fill in for a few months and then let the people of Massachusetts decide. But they will not have the option of choosing Boston Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling.
No, Curt Schilling decided this week that it was insane, the thought of him running for the Senate, and I agree. I mean, he's very popular as the guy who ended the 86-year-old curse of the Boston Red Sox, but he's also campaigned for President Bush over John Kerry. He campaigned for John McCain. I suspect those are not popular positions in Massachusetts.
But there are Republicans in Massachusetts.
Yes.
And they sometimes governors.
And I've met him. I've met him, and he sends his best.
He was a lovely person.
Yes. You know, for the longest time, we thought it was Michael Dukakis. The Boston Globe endorsed him this week. But there was so much backlash against Dukakis, and I was very surprised to see that Republicans and others, some Democrats, saying that when he was governor in 1990, the state was not in great shape.
This is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's really the videotape that's out there of
the
Michael Dukakis, the tank, all of that sort of thing, that it would have brought back an unpleasant memory of the 88 presidential loss and the sort of image of the Democrats in that era as hopeless, hapless losers?
I agree. And so that sounds like a Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. But Dukakis is 75 years old. Paul Kirk is 71 years old. So I guess they're looking for the
youth. They're looking for the youth vote.
Exactly.
The younger man.
That's right.
Does the addition of Paul Kirk, albeit temporarily, mean that the Senate is back to 60 Democrats?
Well, of course, if you think that all the Democrats will vote together, then yes, you have 60, but then you also have the precarious health situation of Robert Byrd,
who is back in the hospital this week and who is in his 90s and is suffering from several ailments. And what happens should Senator Byrd not be able to continue?
Well, there's no changing of the law. You don't have to go the same rigmarole that you went through in Massachusetts.
Not in West Virginia.
West Virginia allows the governor, who's Joe Manchin, you know his wife Gracie, she lives in New York City.
Yes, lovely.
Gracie
woman.
Manchin, yes. Joe Manchin may decide a successor, should it be necessary. And so that they will not be the controversy that happened in Massachusetts.
And we can presume that this gentleman would choose a Democratic candidate, male or female.
He will absolutely do that. But again, Robert Byrd, they say, did not suffer any broken bones.
In his recent fall.
He fell in his house, and he did not know broken bones, no bruises, but they did see an elevated white blood count, and they thought there might be the possibility of infection.
I understand. And we wish him the best.
We do.
And we hope to see him back on the floor of the Senate.
We do.
In other state Democratic news, there seems to be something of a fuss kicked up in New York, where the president weighed in on the subject of whether or not the current governor, David Patterson, should run for election. He wasn't elected governor in the first place. He succeeded the...
The late Eliot Spitzer.
The disgraced Eliot Spitzer. Right. Anyway, Eliot Spitzer, I believe, is now more popular in the polls in New York than David Patterson.
Let me put it this way. Ron Elving is more popular than David Patterson.
He's suggesting that given the numbers that David Patterson is putting up on the
They're
polls...
They're abysmal.
They are below abysmal. And as a result, it would be better for the Democratic Party if he stepped aside and let a more popular rising politician named Andrew Cuomo or something.
Or maybe like Andrew Cuomo.
Or somebody with a famous name whose father was governor.
Yeah, or state attorney general.
To step in his place and perhaps lead the ticket to victory. They're very afraid of losing House seats, of losing
state legislature.
Control of the state legislature. Other
the Gillibrand
races,
seat?
The Senate seat that was appointed just this past year, who has never been elected statewide. She's an iffy proposition. And they just don't want to have the lead horse in that particular parade be David Patterson.
A slight problem, and this is promulgated by people like Charlie Rangel. He points out that Andrew Cuomo ran against the party's choice for governor in 2002, Carl McCall, who is
African-American. Also an African-American.
And now he's going to run against David Patterson, who's African-American, and that's not...
He's beginning to establish a pattern.
Well, and that's why what Andrew Cuomo is doing, in my view, is completely smart. He has not said a word, and I suspect that it was embarrassing for David Patterson to have this leak from the White House, that the White House wants him out, but ultimately I think that David Patterson does not run. If he does run, of course, Rudy Giuliani will probably run and probably beat him, but I don't think Rudy Giuliani is going to run because I don't think David Patterson's going to run. I think Andrew Cuomo will be the Democratic nominee and the next governor.
It's interesting that you're willing to stake your personal reputation for prognosticator perfection on such a tough call, because it appears as though David Patterson is sending every signal he wants to dig in his heels. He's got his wife out there talking to the New York Post and saying the president shouldn't be messing in New York politics.
And a Marist poll came out this week saying that 67% of New Yorkers say that the White House should not get involved in their affairs.
And the White House probably just would have been just as happy to have had what pressure the president brought to bear here remain a matter of some confidence between the president and the governor.
True, but I don't criticize the White House for doing this. First of all, I think the White House, as we saw with Karl Rove, should have political smarts and decide what's best for the Democratic Party. I think David Patterson is a fine person. He's just not proven to be a good governor. He's an accidental governor. He hasn't distinguished himself in the year and a half he's been as governor.
So, I think most people found out about him in New York when he became governor. Before that, he was not a household name.
Right, exactly. And so the White House has done it before. The Obama White House, they got involved in Pennsylvania with Arlen Specter. They got involved in Colorado with Michael Bennett. Looking at 2010, they want the best candidates with the best possible outcome for their chances in 2010. And so the White House is certainly within their right to decide who should be the best candidates.
And no one would dispute that David Patterson is at least a wounded leader for 2010 in the state of New York. Let's talk about the other party. The Republicans are more on the march right now this fall than I think we would have anticipated a few months ago, drawing a certain amount of energy, if you will, from the town hall phenomenon in August, and really gathering their troops again for the first time since the devastating defeat that they suffered last November. And I'm talking here not only about the presidential election, but the congressional elections and around the country where Republicans suffered their biggest reversal in quite a number of years.
Ron, let me just question one thing, because not too long ago we were talking about the town hall protests looking bad for the Republican Party, that they were hurting themselves by being associated with the yelling and the screaming and the rancor. But you're suggesting now that the Republican Party may be on the ascendancy.
I'm suggesting they're on the march, which is not necessarily the same thing as ascendancy. They seem to have decided to cast their lot with those we saw in August.
For better or worse.
For better or for worse, the energy they feel in their party is all coming from those who are most disaffected, most distrustful of Washington, most determined to be against anything that Barack Obama puts his name on. So they've decided that that's where 2010 is, and then they can fight about where 2012 is later on. But clearly, Sarah Palin has decided she's gone back to talking about death panels, which has, of course, been repudiated in any kind of a factual sense. And yet, she's gone back to that. She's suggesting in Hong Kong that the meltdown in the financial system in the United States and the world in general in September of 2008 was caused by excessive governmental interference. That's a little counterintuitive, considering what Alan Greenspan and most everybody else among the conservative economists has had to say. So she seems to be staking out an appeal, particularly to the teabagger mentality and to the town hall energy of August 2009.
If you look at national polls of the general public, they still hold her in pretty much contempt. And yet Republican activists, certainly conservative Republicans, love her. They like, you know, the feistiness.
They like her certitude. They like the fact that she doesn't back down from a fight, that she comes right back and says, well, you say that isn't true, but I think it is. And I like saying it, and I like the response I get when I do, and I'm going to go right back to it. People respond to that positively.
And negatively. I think that's what the Republican Party has to confront as it approaches 2010 and goes into 2012.
And, you know, Mitt Romney was in town for this Values Voters Summit that was here a few days ago. And he spoke, Mike Huckabee spoke. Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, soon to leave office.
Who has a new political action committee.
Clearly running for the national ticket in 2012. They heard from all of these people, and Mitt Romney was trying to make the case that the Republican Party needs to go back to some of its strongest issues of the past and for a positive economic vision and so on. The other candidates were pushing more on the social issues. They were pushing more on abortion, gay rights, or their opposition to gay rights, things of that
nature. Obamacare.
It was interesting that when they took a straw poll of the people attending the Values Voters Summit, they went for Mike Huckabee.
Well, there were a total of 597 votes, but yes, go ahead.
Yes, but these are the
right
activists.
Right.
And these, I would submit that Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, the leaders of the Senate and the House Republicans, are turning to these people as their lodestar. This is the Republican Party they're listening to. They're not listening to the corporate chieftains. They're not listening to the intellectual conservatives. They're not listening to the neocons. They're not listening to the people that were the guiding force in the George W. Bush operation, if you will, in the White House. They're turning essentially to their own grassroots and saying, you give us our marching orders. We'll do what you want.
And what fascinates me about this, too, is that all the attention, or most of the attention, was on Sarah Palin, who wasn't there. So all the economic conservatives, the old bedrock of the Republican Party, seems to be ignored. One thing I want to point out, though, for Mitt Romney's argument that the economic conservatism may be the wave of the future for the party, Meg Whitman, the former CEO of eBay, announced her candidacy for governor of California. Now, the Republicans are in big trouble in California, obviously. Schwarzenegger's numbers are just dreadful.
But he's not running again.
He's not, but neither was George W. Bush in 2008, and he paid the price, or the Republican Party paid the price for Bush's poor numbers. Meg Whitman could be the kind of Republican, I say this theoretically, the kind of Republican that the GOP turns to, that the future is not divisive social issues. It's not Obamacare's going to kill my grandmother. It'll be that the way to financial security is through this economic philosophy of the Republican Party.
Just in the next few days, the California Republicans are going to be gathering, having their annual convention. They're going to hear from Meg Whitman. They're going to also hear from Arnold Schwarzenegger, who may be making a kind of farewell address to the party. They have not been huge Arnold fans. His strength was more among independents and some Democrats.
They were when he rescued the state from Gray Davis, but not since.
And particularly not as he's played footsie with the Obama administration on a number of issues.
And speaking of playing footsie, not with the legislature, but with perhaps the federal election
committee. Don't tell me, don't mention a name. My father worked in a mill.
All his life. There is a federal investigation on whether federal campaign money, John Edwards' campaign money, is being used to either promulgate his affair with Riel Hunter or hush money to keep her quiet.
Now, have we ever had a case of somebody being prosecuted in a criminal sense for their breaking of campaign laws in a presidential campaign before?
I don't know that, but he had the nerve to run for president and make himself available for vice president.
Knowing that he had this exposure.
And could bring the whole party down with him if it was exposed prior to the 2008 election. To the fact that he would announce with a straight face that my wife's cancer was in remission.
At the time,
and that is beyond belief. But also the fact that he sat down on a so-called tell-all interview with Nightline a while back saying that, one, I did not authorize any hush money for Riel Hunter, and two, her child is absolutely not mine.
Couldn't be. Physically impossible.
And now there are some indications, I mean, they're anonymous sources, but indications that he may very well fess up to being the father
paternity
of that child. And so, so if there's anybody who should be punished for, even if it's just campaign finance regulations, it should be John Edwards.
And let's not forget to mention that he allegedly promised Riel Hunter that he would marry her after Elizabeth Edwards had died and have the wedding on top of a New York hotel with Dave Matthews Band as the entertainment.
Actually, I kind of like Dave Matthews.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And you're such an oldie. Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
What a goodie.
bandits.